Welcome to episode 4 of You Like Hoops. We'll get the boring stuff out of the way off the top. You can follow me at Deep Fried Couch. You can follow the show at You Like Hoops. If you have any ideas or suggestions for the show or ideas for potential guests, you can feel free to DM me on either account. The DMs on the You Like Hoops account are open. Lastly, a reminder that this podcast is a part of the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network, which I think maybe is a phrase I made up, but anyway, the point being, it is under the GBB umbrella, and if you want to get every episode in iTunes, you can subscribe to the GBB Live iTunes feed. You'll get this podcast, and you'll also get GBB Live. I think if you're listening to this, then there's probably a episode with Joe and Grace Baker out, so you can give that a listen. That's more of a what's going on with the Grizzlies weekly show, and so you can give that a listen as well. That about wraps that part up. We will get on to our guest. You may know him as the author of the Beyond the Arc blog for the Memphis Flyer. You may know him at Flyer Grizz Blog on Twitter. He is a alleged fellow Twitter grump. He blocked me on Twitter last week for inserting Mo Spates' name into popular songs. He is Kevin Leip. Kevin, how's it going?
It's better since you stopped doing that.
I have to disagree, but you know, to each his own. So normally we start out with kind of how you got into the Grizzlies. Depending on the guest, that's whether it's fandom or whether how you got to write about the Grizzlies, came to cover the Grizzlies. All these kind of apply for you, but we are going to take a brief detour first of all because I don't know any of the guests so far extremely well, but we all kind of know each other in an internet way. But Kevin definitely takes the record by about 16 years of people that I kind of know as far as the podcast guests so far. I doubt that will be topped considering no one in my real life actually likes basketball. So Kevin and I went to fifth grade together. Was that the only year you went to?
That was the only year I was there, yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Do you remember who your homeroom teacher was?
Miss Conrad.
Okay, so we had the same homeroom teacher. I was pretty sure that was the case. So memory is a weird thing. I have a thing where like I will forget like really big details of really important things in my life. This is much to the disgust of my parents because there will be like vacations they took me on to Disney World that I won't remember being there at all.
You don't remember the expensive things.
Right, exactly. But I remember like innocuous details about random things, fifth grade being one of them. So I've got three things written down here that I remember about Kevin from fifth grade. The first is that I was an extremely sheltered child, I should say. My life was censored. And so Kevin was the first kid that I ever heard use the F word. it was traumatic. I didn't, not only was I traumatized, I didn't even know that a child's mouth could form that word. I didn't know there was a physical capability of it. So it was funny when Kevin kind of came onto the Grizzly scene, or I became aware of him at least. Does that sound pretty much in check with you as a fifth grader? Does that check out?
It does. And you know, the thing, I must have just learned it. I'm a big fan of that word in the appropriate context. I'm guessing I don't remember when I would have said it that you would have heard it, but I'm sure I said it. I do not doubt at all.
Yeah, and Joe Mullinax, who is the site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, he tells me that our podcast is billed as the uncensored show, so we could say it. I'm not going to. I'll, you know, if I'm going to use it, I might as well use it for something better than this.
Yeah, save it for what it's worth. It's funny that it's hilarious to me that is that's your first memory of me, because on Grizzly's Twitter, I try not to. My mindset is kind of like, I don't want some kid to get in trouble for like reading my stuff.
You know? Yeah.
Like I'll use language when players use language. I'll use it when I'm quoting people. I'll use it sparingly, right? But I kind of, my whole thing is, it's not that I have a problem with it. I certainly, obviously, if I was the first person to heard say it, I don't have a problem with it. I just remember being that kid with parents who disapproved of it, right? And mm-hmm. I don't want to be the reason that some kid can't like read basketball articles anymore. So I it's hilarious that is so strongly identified with the first time you ever heard a kid drop the F-bomb.
That was an important day in my life.
You became a man then.
Absolutely. Okay, so one other thing, and you can dispute this, but as it pertains to your potential delinquency as a fifth grader, the other thing I remember, we talked about random details. This is the most random of details that I don't know that you'll remember. You might deny if you do, But I remember Miss Conrad, we had an accelerated reader computer in the back of the room.
Yes, it was an Apple IIe.
And she would get furious because people stole the keys off of the keyboard. And I really think I remember there being keys in your desk that were visible to us while we were getting the lecture about stealing keyboard keys.
It was probably me.
Yeah.
That sounds like I hated her and she hated me back. And that totally sounds like something
that
I
was. That was a really weird year, yeah. Whether it was your only year or not. I think that like a girl in our class like turned out the lights and stole her cane one time before we went on a field trip. Like
I don't remember that, but I just remember like she had been there for 30 years and she was retiring and she used all of her vacation days.
Yeah, yeah. She also recorded herself reading Where the Red Fern Grows and played it for us on a tape rather than have like an actual class.
Totally.
But yeah.
Yeah,
I think the reason I was around you, do you remember the name Shay Soma?
I do.
Okay, so I think you were kind of friends with him maybe. And
was.
That was,
we hung out and we imagined that we had our own comic book company and we drew all of our own comic books.
There you go. So Shay was you know, I'm sorry if you recoil, listener, at the term frenemy, but if ever it applied, it was this. We were very close frenemies up until high school, really, and he still called me in college. He was a big Tiger Hoops fan, and at that time, I was obsessed with it, so he would call for the news of the day. But, yeah, quick story on him before we move on. He's kind of a legend in my family, but for many reasons, but one of the Shay stories is we had, like, a sleepover of, like, 8 or 10 guys when we were in sixth grade, and everybody spent the night. The next morning, my dad made a huge breakfast. We all went out on my parents' deck and ate breakfast. And he came inside. My dad's name is Chuck. He came inside and said, "Mr. Chuck, breakfast was excellent. Your eggs, however, were subpar." was sixth grade. So that shows you what I was dealing with. So anyway, with that out of the way, I doubt I'll have too many guests that I can go all the way back to fifth grade with. And that was a really weird year.
Yeah, that's the only... So there's a reason that was the only year I was there. I think that was just a bad situation to be introduced into.
Yeah, well, that place didn't get any better, as I've talked about on here before. So yeah, without going into too many details.
We could sense that it was going that way and did something else.
So. Yeah, well, good for you guys. I didn't get out till after 12th grade. But
another
story
about fifth grade is there was a kid, I won't say his name, but the only kid I've ever just beaten the hell out of was in our class. I think he was in our class, and slammed my hand in the locker the day before Thanksgiving break, and I wailed on his head in the hallway, and that is the only person I've ever really just pummeled.
All right, well, I'll need that name when we get done recording.
You'll get it off the air.
So anyway, we'll get back into the normal structure of the episode. every guest, we kind of start out with, I say origin story, for lack of a better term. But sure. Basically, you obviously have been in Memphis for a long time, if we knew each other in fifth grade.
I have, yeah. My origin story is apparently a prolific cursor.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Dispurser of violence.
So when the Grizzlies came, since you were probably around, were you an NBA fan before that? Was it kind of because of the Grizzlies? How did you get to be, obviously, a really intense Grizzlies fan?
You know, I was an NBA fan, honestly, because of Penny Hardaway.
Yeah, like a lot of people here.
I idolized him. I watched the Magic when he was there, and even after he wasn't on the team anymore, I still kind of kept up with the Magic. And then, you know, I was just kind of, for a while, generic NBA fan, really. And even after the Grizzlies came, they were terrible, and I was kind of not into it. I was more of a Tigers fan then.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they were a lot better then.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, Grizzlies for me, I was a big fan of the Pistons, like the Rasheed Wallace, Tayshaun,
yeah.
and Rip Hamilton Pistons, and I watched that team a whole lot through the mid-2000s, and it wasn't really until the Pau Gasol trade and when the Grizzlies got bad but interesting
mm-hmm.
that I kind of started paying attention, like the Iverone years, really, which is probably no one else's origin story. But that's really kind of where it started for me, because I was like, you know, these guys are here, I'm here. They're the hometown team. I probably should pay attention. They've got all these young players. I thought OJ Mayo was going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And he was awesome as a rookie, RIP. And, you know, that's kind of where I started really paying attention. So I was kind of, you know, I watched them. I kept up with them. But I was not a diehard Grizzlies fan from day one. I just wasn't. I was watching the Pistons. I just loved that Pistons team. And that was kind of, you know... That's actually the real secret origin story on my love affair with Tayshaun Prince.
There you go. It
goes back to like being in ninth grade or whatever. But yeah, so that's my kind of grizzly story. That's where I got on the train.
Yeah, it's funny you said that, because that is kind of close to when I got really into it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're the exact same age since we went to fifth grade together. But
well, I think that's a certain kind of NBA fan, though, right?
Yeah,
the interesting bad team mm-hmm. fan, you know. And
I think
I've always been that.
We'll probably talk about it more in future episodes, hopefully. But I mean, mine was a lot of it just listening to Chris Vernon like scream at Chris Wallace. And I just like, I didn't know, I wasn't like big into the talk radio scene. I wasn't big into the Grizzlies at all. I mean, like, I knew they were in town. We would go to games sometimes in the most casual of ways. I was a fan, but I was obsessed with the Tigers. And I just remember like flipping radio stations and thinking, God, like, what an a-hole he's being to this guest. And then finding out it was like the GM, and so like I just became interested in the whole team building philosophy and all that stuff.
So
that's kind of similar to my timeline. So then how did you end up actually writing about the Grizzlies? You were on the SB Nation blog, you wrote for that, right? Before it was Grizzly Bear Blues.
Yes, it was still straight out of Vancouver.
So give me that story.
I mean, really around the first playoff run, the Spurs playoff run, I was kind of reading the stuff that was out there, and not to cast aspersions. Well, sure I will. Josh is a friend of mine. I just kind of didn't really, Three Shades of Blue, and didn't really do the kind of stuff I was into. I was reading Free Darko a lot, and I just didn't really see that reflected much in anybody talking about the Grizzlies. Because nobody was talking about the Grizzlies, right? They just had Three Shades of Blue, and they were, you know, they were doing good work, but that was the only one. And so I was thinking, man, I should start a Grizzlies blog and do like weird stuff,
right?
and I started to be kind of like a Twitter person, like a Grizzlies Twitter person, and I was thinking that I was going to build up this persona and then start this blog. And I had a DM conversation with Matt Moore. The world famous HP basketball, who hates me now, but, no, he doesn't hate me. I just went on his podcast. And I just was direct messaging him, and I was like, hey, I kind of want to write about the Grizzlies in this weird way that I don't think anybody's doing. Should I start my own blog? Like what should I do? And he was like, well, they're straight out of Vancouver and they never have enough writers. And why don't you go email this Tom guy? So I wrote up a sample piece that I was going to kind of use as my first post for the blog that I was going to start. And I just kind of edited it and emailed it to Tom Lorenzo, who I think he's still the site manager of Nets Daily, but he's in Brooklyn. He covers the Nets now. And I just emailed it to him and was like, hey, I want to write about the Grizzlies and I hear you guys need people and here's a sample post and let me know if I can help out, whatever. I knew going into it that it didn't pay anything. And he liked it and he kind of forwarded it to the rest of the staff. I think it was like Marcus Privet and Griffin Gatta, Scott Beatty, who posted as the foreign flopper. We bonded over Juan Carlos Navarro. and that was kind of the staff then. That was all it was. It was kind of this just ragtag band of idiots, just writing whatever, because nobody was reading it, right?
Yeah.
Nobody was paying attention to what we were doing. It was the old SB Nation like look and feel, so it was way back. And yeah, from there I just kind of kept doing it. That 2012 season was the first one. The lockout season was the first one that I covered like the whole season. And by the end of that year the staff was down to just me and Tom basically writing everything. And somewhere along there they actually relaunched the site and we got a new logo, and it was still straight out of Vancouver. And we started the conversation with the Grizzlies about whether we could get a credential or not. And I guess it was that off season before the conference finals year, I was able to go to a couple of practices during the preseason and kind of prove to the Grizzlies that I'm not a maniac.
Right.
And I got a credential. I was like single game, whatever. I had to like reapply for it every game, but I was going up to people and telling them where I was from. And I was saying straight out of Vancouver, and they're like, what? So that planted this seed in my mind of like, oh my, this is an embarrassing name. And eventually Tom, you know, because Tom is a Grizzlies fan and he does keep up with the Grizzlies, but he lives in Queens. Like, he's not here.
Right.
And I was the one going to the games, and the Nets were moving to Brooklyn, and that site manager gig opened up, and Seth Pollock, who kind of manages the network,
right.
You know, we kind of figured out, well, why don't I take over? Tom can still help me out, and then Tom can go run Nets Daily, because he can actually go cover those games in Brooklyn.
Right.
And so then my reign of terror at Straight Out of Vancouver began. And
gotcha.
That's kind of my origin story there.
Yeah, it's weird because all of that stuff feels so recent to the point where, like, I think I've kind of talked about this, but, and if that conversation sounds really inside to people, that's probably because it is. But truthfully, it's interesting to me because I became obsessive about the Grizzlies about the time you were talking about, but I didn't get into like Grizzlies Twitter stuff till, it feels like longer, but maybe like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And so all that this stuff is news to me. Like I didn't.
Yeah, you're a newcomer, man.
Yeah, I had a Twitter account, but I wasn't like on there, and I'm pretty in the world at this point. Yeah. But
when I didn't read Straight Out of Vancouver when it started, it was started by this guy named DJ Turtleface. And I used to have his real email address because it's coming up on 10 seasons. I used to have his contact info and I don't have it anymore. But I didn't read the blog. I didn't know the site existed.
Yeah.
And you know, we're talking 300 page views a month.
Like, yeah.
Nobody was reading it. And that's some of my favorite Grizzlies. Like Griffin Gatta wrote this huge piece that's still on the site about like what OJ Mayo did on his summer break, and it was like he went like on this wilderness journey to find himself and all this kind of, some of my favorite favorite Grizzlies writing ever was being done by this random group of us, and nobody was reading it, and it was awesome.
Yeah, that is the timeline of it. I've had that with a couple other people where I'm just like, oh, there's this whole like little window where it started getting popular, but I have no awareness of, and I realize like how short the amount of time I've been aware of a lot of the people who will probably be on this podcast. But
and there's plenty of embarrassing. There's somewhere in those archives, there's a post where I talked about like how Rudy Gay was like Lindsey Buckingham or something like that. Like it's back there.
That checks out.
It's in the archives. It doesn't sound that out of character, but I just remember that as being particularly like, why did someone let me post this on the internet?
So when did the Flyer thing come about? I mean, I kind of know, but what the timeline of when you took over for Chris?
Yeah. So somewhere along the way, I guess it must have been before the, gosh, what year was that? I don't remember.
Yes, I'm terrible with years in terms of placing things.
If it was Jaeger's first season or his second season, I can tell you because I can look at the author review and tell you the last time Harrington posted to the blog.
Yeah, I'm terrible. Like people who can just call up like, oh yeah, this was this season. I'm like, nah, I'd totally lost.
I feel like, so at some point we renamed the site Grizzly Bear Blues, and that must have been the summer before the conference finals year.
Okay.
Because that makes sense. Because it was a big whole involved process, and like all of the site managers were on this epic email thread, like throwing out names. Like we came up with like 400 names.
I'm sure.
They're all stupid. Seth Rosenthal accidentally sent people to a porn site by throwing out a joke URL that turned out to be a real one, and all kinds of stuff. It was great. But at some point along the way, it must have been before Jaeger's first season, so 2014. At some point in that summer, you know, Harrington was Flyer Grizz blog on Twitter.
Still, every once in a while, I get confused.
And at some point over that summer, he I have a tea bag in my pocket that's crinkling. This is really inside baseball, but I'm gonna do that. At some point that summer, I noticed that his Twitter handle had changed to Harrington NBA,
mm-hmm.
and so I was like, what's happening there? But eventually it came out that he was leaving the Flyer to go because he was the music editor here and the Grizzlies writer. And he did some stuff for Memphis Magazine too. And he was leaving to go to the Commercial Appeal. And so at that time, you know, I was working at the Kroc Center at the time. So I was doing a lot of AV stuff. I've played in bands and stuff. I have a pretty extensive kind of music, live music background. And I was writing about the Grizzlies. And so mm-hmm. I emailed Bruce, the Flyer editor, and was just like, look, I like playing bands on, and I cover the Grizzlies. So I should be your music editor and your Grizzlies writer. Like,
makes sense.
Just what I should do. And, you know, of course, they broke his job up. That was such a Chris specific job.
Right.
They split it up into separate gigs. And I got the Grizzlies part of it as a freelancer, based on Chris's recommendation. Chris apparently recommended me for it. Without me even knowing, to Bruce. And yeah, so I took over then as the Flyer, the Beyond the Arc blogger, or whatever you want to call it. I never really have a title. I finally settled on it a few months ago that I'm just going to call myself the Flyers basketball critic.
Makes sense to me.
Pretentious enough to fit.
Yeah.
But at some point, yeah. So I was doing that freelance for a while, and I'm here full time now. Because my day job is actually I'm the digital manager for the whole company, because we do a lot of stuff other than the Flyer, and the Flyer does a lot of stuff other than basketball. So it's funny. It's still kind of my side job, even though it's my job.
Sure.
that's how I ended up here.
Cool. So speaking of Twitter and all that stuff, and how you came to cover it for the blog, you are known as. And sometimes I am known as, but you more so than me, I think. Eeyore, the word Eeyore gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah, by Matt Moore.
Speaking. Yeah, Matt Moore, who actually might hate me. Kevin was joking about him, but
no, I love Matt Moore. He obviously his Twitter persona is a Twitter persona. He has helped. I think everybody who has some kind of position covering the NBA, he's probably helped them at some point.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, and you actually said that to me, not in a public Twitter conversation, but you know how much he'd helped you, and I've heard that from other people. And honestly, to me, like, I like to know that stuff, because I said this to you also, like, nobody, I don't know what it is, and I'm not going to unfollow him or anything, but like, nobody pisses me off more than him on Twitter. He did it at the end of the playoffs last year, and it just, I don't know what it is. It just rubs me the wrong way. But then, you know, there is a real world side to everyone's Twitter account. And so you were like telling me that, and it's pretty obvious just because of the network he's created, how many people he's helped. And that matters a lot more to me than whether or not I think he's being condescending, telling people not to panic. But
he is totally. And I think he would admit that. Well, he may not admit to the condescending. I'm the grump.
But yeah, speaking of that, so do you think, and that's like more than this season, I don't know if it goes back beyond last, but maybe that's where I saw him give you the Eeyore stuff, and certainly other people, and I'm no stranger to people telling me I'm grumpy on Twitter. Do you think
when you grow up reading the Old Testament a lot?
Yeah, there you go. So you think that is fair? Like, just purely in terms of your views on the Grizzlies, do you think, and fair makes it sound like there's some sort of like moral judgment on it. I just mean, like, do you think it's sort of accurate that you are generally on the more negative side in terms of, like, I don't know, people who talk about the Grizzlies on Twitter?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's negative just by comparison, though. I don't think it's actually negative.
That's what I think.
You know what I mean? I came from a blogging background, so this is going to sound extremely, this is going to sound like I'm belittling it, but it doesn't. That's not how I mean it. I am not. The purpose of a fan blog is different from the purpose of a newspaper columnist, you know, a newspaper writer. I think a site like Grizzly Bear Blues, you know, you're shepherding a community, and you're all kind of gathered around this thing that you love.
Right.
And so you kind of have to be a little bit more positive. You have to be a little bit more, even just in your tone, you have to kind of keep everybody together, because why are you going to go read game threads if everybody's just like, oh, this sucks? I don't have that obligation, right? My obligation for my editor is to just call it like I see it. And I think that between it's such an interesting media dynamic around the team, right? Because you have, and especially after Lionel Hollins was kind of set packing, you have this daily paper who's very kind of antagonistic. You have ownership of a team that's very interested in locking down their messaging,
right?
To the point of hiring their own beat writer now,
mm-hmm.
and starting their own media arm. Why wouldn't they? I think every team's going to have that in the next 2 years, probably. you know, the thing about the Flyers, we're the alternative weekly, right? So we kind of have to fill in the gaps where nobody else is covering anything. Mm-hmm. And I really see our role, my role, as cutting through all of that, right?
Sure.
I don't really have an agenda. I don't have sources to protect, really. You know, I'm more of an analysis role, and I don't have to play the games that the team or the daily or kind of the fan blog community has to play. I get to just call it like I see it. And fortunately, I have one of the world's most pessimistic outlooks on just about everything.
And I
think it just comes across in the writing. You know, I don't know if I've read too much Herman Melville or like Ecclesiastes or what, but that's just me. Anybody who's friends with me, that's just kind of how I am.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is you have a really good excuse because it's your job and I'm just grumpy apparently.
Yeah, you're just,
I think for me, a lot of it is just in some ways, and if this sounds like super self-indulgent and pretentious, then it's probably because it is. But I mean, I think I came by it. I got into the team when they were bad. And then like, I, you know, got really into like the deeper parts of fandom, probably mostly reading Harrington.
Sure.
And so like, that's just the lens of basketball, which interests me the most.
Yeah.
And that's not to say like, I mean, I like have felt like my heart was about to like explode. Like I might actually need to seek medical attention, like cheering a game. So it's not like I think I'm above being a fan. That's definitely not the case. I am a fan, but it's just kind of like, I don't have whatever the I call them rah-rah fans. And that sounds kind of disparaging. I don't mean for it to be. I think that's great if like your emotions are so tied to it that you can just like be all for the team. But I think what comes with that is sort of a defensive feeling about the team. And I have that for certain players, probably more than others. But I think the other thing it comes with is those people are usually, when things go poorly, way angrier than I am in the other direction. It's just a bigger swing of emotions in general.
As the wise prophet once said, keep a cool booty.
Yeah, exactly. Cool booty. So I think that's what made the last skid, and we don't really do a whole lot of like talking about, you know, time sensitive stuff, but this last skid of the Grizzlies, it was the first time, because I mean, to the extent, what is the word, panic? I mean, in a basketball sense, that was the first time I kind of bought into some panic.
Sure.
Because usually it's like, you're so grumpy. Why do you think the team's going to hit the under? And then usually when things go poorly, I'm like, y'all chill out. They're going to be fine. Yeah. This one I was a little less sure of. But yeah, I think that's kind of the way I end up feeling about the team is just I get labeled.
I mean, I can tell you the exact moment that I quit being the rah-rah fan and quit being so emotionally tied to it and started kind of withdrawing into this kind of impartial observer sort of mindset about it. And the exact moment, honestly, was game one of the Clippers series, the comeback game where they lost, where they blew a 27-point lead, right?
Yeah.
I was sitting in the front row of the club level of that game with we were dating at the time. We're married now. I guess we were already married then, 2012. Yeah, we were already married then. And my in-laws, and sat through that game, and I was so excited about it. And, they lost that game. And walking out of that sold-out arena, and it was totally silent as we were making our way down the stairs to the plaza level. Like totally silent. All you can hear are people's feet. No one is talking. Totally silent all the way to the parking garage. People are like getting in fist fights about who's going to pull out this parking spot when, because they're all so mad about what just happened. Like, and I just remember feeling just terrible. And at some point that night, it like broke something. And I was just like, this is a sports competition.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I cannot invest this much in the outcome of a sporting competition, especially because these guys are going to blow it again. Like Rudy Gay is not going to, and he's not ever going to play transition defense. They're going to lose this series. Like I cannot remain this invested in this. And there was something about that series, and I was covering it for the blog, and I was watching every game, and you know, sure, I wanted to have Reggie Evans killed by the end of it, but and who doesn't?
Yeah.
But it was that particular series was kind of when I kind of flipped that switch from, I realized that for me to remain healthy about it, because I it may not come across, I can get very high strung about things. for me to remain healthy about it, I had to think about it a different way. I had to go more in that route. Blame Randy Foy and Nick Young.
I blame Nick Young for most things. That's funny. I have two of those kind of moments. And like I said, I still can get, I'm kind of a mindset that where I can, and you can't always control this, but I try to accept the emotional highs where they come and not like let a Grizzlies game affect my mood the next day. But my two were that game you just talked about where I ripped the Believe shirt I had on.
Yeah.
I think I like wrote over it and made it say grieve, literally. And the other one was when the Tigers lost the championship game. Like I took a Louisville slugger to a coffee table. You know, I was in college at the time. So like our back patio of the apartment we lived in and was just wailing on this table like with a Louisville slugger, this crappy coffee table that we were letting rot on our back patio anyway.
That is even more depressing. I was at the time I worked at the Apple store. I was going to school part time and I was starting like Apple Genius training to work at the Genius Bar. So I was, those 2 weeks, I was in San Jose, California, going to training at Apple headquarters every single day. And that game was over the weekend or whatever. I guess it was probably a weeknight, right? And so I was on the West Coast, and they'd just beaten UCLA, and I was the only person probably in the entire Bay Area wearing a Memphis sweatshirt around and getting all kinds of crazy looks. And I had to watch that. I had to watch the Tigers lose the championship game by myself in my extended stay hotel room in San Jose, California, like 3,000 miles away from all of my Tiger fan friends and stuff. And I was at Memphis at the time too. So, you know, I'd been like running into Joey Dorsey in the Tiger Den and stuff like that.
Right.
And so like I watched that game by myself. They lost by myself. I got up from there. I went out to the curb. And I sat down on the curb outside the hotel and smoked an entire pack of Pall Malls before I went by myself, totally silent, before I went back inside.
Yeah, we had, in the jinx of all jinxes, we were standing up like with our coats or whatever on. We were standing up watching from the corner.
Oh, no.
Watching like the regulation comeback that really was what ended it anyway. But we stood watching that from the door because we wanted to be some of the first people to get to the bookstore, because if they won, they were going to release lot of t-shirts. Yeah. Like at midnight or whatever time. But anyway, yeah. So that was definitely the one where I was like, this is impacting me emotionally in a way I don't like.
Yeah.
And I sent like some awful texts to a friend of mine who went to UT, University of Tennessee, texted me right after that and said, "Man, those guys really choked." And the things I sent back were just not okay.
So
I
was like, "Your phone in the disposal."
Yeah, this can't happen anymore.
Yeah.
In terms of the way you write about the Grizzlies, you mentioned like some of the weirdness that would go on over it straight out of Vancouver. But like, you wrote something last week that had a pretty extreme NASCAR through line, a thread that was woven throughout it. I have to say, like, you weaving in non-basketball things was not a surprise to me. The NASCAR caught me a little off guard. But
I'll show you my Dale Earnhardt autograph.
So in terms of like writing style, I think it's fair to say it's pretty different. Even game recaps. And I'll just say, like, I don't really do game recaps, and I don't mean write. I don't read them, just because I used to read them because I wanted the quote. So I would just like skim for quotes. Now, like, you can watch them on Grind City the next day if you want to. You can listen to Peter Edmiston, who pulls all the relevant stuff for Locked On Grizzlies.
Yeah.
There's a million ways to just get the quotes. But you do recaps in an extremely different way a lot of the times. I think a very interesting way. How did you hone that? Was that kind of before the flyer or something you've continued to hone?
I think I probably played it more straight at SB Nation because there was a rotation, right?
Right.
So I wasn't doing them all. You know, some nights I would do the quick recap, and if I was at the game, I'd have the thing written before the game actually ended, you know, and just like post it immediately. I'm sure people still do that. If you have to do that, I'm sorry. I know your pain. Just imagine having to do all 80 of them. I've had to keep them interesting, or I won't do them.
Right.
You know, I don't have a team of writers anymore. And that was, if there's one thing that I miss about running Grizzly Bear Blues, it's that team, right? You can kind of, you can sit back and you can steer the coverage and you can bring in people that you know are talented and you can just let them loose.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to write about every single basketball game and every single thing that happens. You can just kind of stay on top of it and it takes care of itself. That's absolutely not what I do now. It's me. And if I don't post it, nobody else is going to do it. There's only so many, both teams played hards you can write.
Yeah.
And at some point I just kind of realized, like, you know, what I feel like I'm good at is kind of contextualizing what's happening with the team, kind of in the bigger picture of what's happening in the season and what's happening, really in kind of the overall narrative of this Grizzlies run, right? Like, this 6 or 7 years is a important moment in the span of this city, I think, you know. And I think we all know that now, but 3 years ago, maybe we didn't all know that, but I felt that even then. And there's so many things that happen that kind of have to be contextualized in the bigger picture of this love affair between this team and the city and these specific players. Unfortunately, some of whom who are aging, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I still kind of see that as a gap in the coverage that I have to fill. That way back from 2011 when,
sure,
I was emailing stuff to Tom Lorenzo, it was just like this big picture kind of like, yes, people care about this. Why do they care about it? What is it that they care about? What emotional, because obviously people are having some sort of emotional resonance with this basketball team. So what is that? What emotion is that resonates? And, you know, I think that also kind of drives some of the grump stuff, because a lot of times what it resonates with is that kind of melancholy, right? The passage of time.
Sure.
You know, I don't shy away from that. I try not to. And I think if you talk about it that way, you're kind of in a pretty small minority.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's such an interesting time and that's honestly, that's just my preferred style of writing to read, or really not even writing, but just my preferred way of thinking about the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
Because there's just a lot to dig into. But I mean, you talk about the Team City stuff. This team is in such a weird spot because, yes, they've been around for 15 plus or whatever years, 16. Yeah. But like, really the stuff that matters is what started however many years ago, back in 11, yeah, 12, during this playoff run.
6 years ago.
And so I talked to, back when I did a story back in the fall, I really briefly talked with Jason Wexler about this. But I think it's such an interesting challenge for him in the business side to try to forecast the future, because like, this team will get bad again. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not really soon, but you don't know. But
it could be next year.
Yeah, there's so much newness in that we don't really know what this team looks like when it's bad in terms of fan support and revenue and all that kind of stuff. There's really no precedent for it, because you can't compare it to before, when we had never tasted anything like what we have as a fan base,
right,
over these last few years. So, I mean, it's fascinating because, like I said, despite 15 years, that's still a baby franchise. And we're about to go through a stretch, whether it's 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, that is being a not good team for the first time since we've been an awesome team. And since that connection's been made, and since, you know, 2-year-olds have become 17-year-olds, you know, with the Grizzlies in town. So it's a fascinating time for that perspective, I think.
It is, and it's interesting, too, because they have to shore up, just from a business perspective, they have to shore up what they can now, because at the end of the day, like, they're still an NBA basketball franchise in the poorest metro area in America. One of them, anyway.
Yeah.
And one of the smaller, definitely the smallest media market, right? Mm-hmm. So they have got, that's why they're so intent on the regional stuff. But it's also just a challenge, right? I mean, Memphis in a lot of ways is the biggest town in the Mississippi Delta. And that's not where you want to be in 2017 in a lot of ways, in terms of growing your revenue. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see if and when, because look, we know Memphis. Like, Memphis doesn't show up if you're bad. They just don't. Look at the Tigers.
Right.
Memphis is a lot of things. Showing up to cheer for bad basketball is not one of them, because there's plenty of not bad basketball to be found.
Right.
Whether that's at the high school level, or, you know, one of these, there's going to be a good team somewhere. It's Memphis.
Right. And you don't have a level of wealth where people just, season tickets are something that's not thought about. It's just auto-renewed.
Exactly.
I mean, for people to justify that portion of their income, for a lot of people, like, you need a decent product. And quite honestly, to get even more nuts and bolts, you need a product where you can resell a portion of your tickets on the secondary market to pay for your season tickets.
Absolutely. And that's the problem. You know, Grizzlies fans like to complain about there's always so many Laker fans and there's always so many Warrior fans and there's always so many LeBron jerseys. It's because it's Memphis and people are selling those tickets to pay for their season.
I say
tickets.
God bless the Warriors fans.
Yeah, who cares? Yeah, if they want to be in here by themselves, whatever. That's what it is. It's so many people fund their season tickets through those big games. So that's never going to change. This is just not a town where a huge percentage of the people have that kind of disposable income. And, you know, that's what makes Memphis Memphis, right? Look at an Oklahoma City crowd and look at a Memphis crowd. There's going to be a difference.
Exactly.
You know?
Thank goodness. Yeah, so that it's interesting stuff coming up. And like I said, I think the way that big picture writing and thinking kind of lends itself to cover that in a way that can't be covered. And, you know, I think it's been an interesting year, and I won't go too far into this. I've talked about it on a couple other episodes. Mm-hmm. It's been an interesting year in shifting roles in the Memphis media sports landscape.
Yeah.
Because you have a guy like Chris Vernon who goes over to Grind City, and whether you think that censors him or doesn't censor him, or he's doing the same show or not, going from a radio show that's on 3 hours a day to a podcast is different. So there are some undeniably, whether they're for better or for worse, there's changes. Yeah, and then you got Harrington doing 901 every day, which I can't even wrap my head around. But I mean, that's another big Grizzlies voice. So it's a weird time. And I think there's a lot of void to fill in some ways in those more traditional channels.
Well, even just myself, you know, as my kind of quote unquote other job responsibilities, I don't have time to write a recap every day.
You're another good example.
Yeah. I did a podcast today instead of recapping the Bucks game last night. Like I did not have an hour this morning to write a recap. And that's part of that's being a, you know, I got a 2-year-old now.
Right.
I didn't have a kid when I started this. I wasn't, you know, I had all kinds of time. And I think it's just, it's kind of a part of it's a natural progression, but it's also just the nature of media. Like this is, you know, these daily papers that are bought by Gannett are not that they're getting cut. Right. That's kind of what we're up against at the Flyers. Like, how do we fill all these gaps of coverage that are coming because the daily is not doing them anymore. And, you know, basketball is one of those, excuse me, but, yeah, it's weird. It's a very weird time right now because a lot of the kind of established voices of coverage are not around anymore. And I don't think Vernon's being censored by the Grizzlies, but I do think he has a smaller reach than he did. I mean, he's not on the radio. You know, that's the biggest station in Memphis. And not as many people are going to sit through a whole podcast of it every day. You know, you just kind of catch it in the car. And that's, you know, whether you like Vernon or agree with Vernon or, you know, think he's an idiot or whatever, it's kind of, you have to go seek him out. You can't, he's not just kind of ambient Chris Vernon floating around in the air.
Well, and we talked about bubbles last week with Edmiston. I mean, I'm in a bubble of, I just like, that's why I started this podcast. I love podcasts. Yeah. I'd never have the radio on, and that is not representative of the population at large, especially the sports fan population probably in Memphis.
That's how I am too. I haven't listened to the radio in a long time. And I go on the radio sometimes. I don't listen to it. You know, I just don't. And part of it is just you just get so worn out on narratives. That's the thing that I have tried to fight this year more than anything else is just, you know, you'll have a couple columns come out. Like, for example, I have not read a single column about last night's game. But I guarantee you all they've talked about on the radio today was the Chandler Parsons signing a mistake? And should the Grizzlies start the core four now? I guarantee you that's because those are the narrative. That's the headlines. That's the easy thing to grab and to talk about in 15-minute chunks with whatever guy you get on the air. Like, that's how the format works. And, God, I'm just so burned out on that.
Like, it is. And, I mean, I'll say in defense of those guys, like, me and people like me and you that pay the level of attention that we do the Grizzlies, we're not their audience anyway.
No, I mean,
for a lot of people who are not interacting and seeking out information, like that's the information they have on the Grizzlies. So it's got a place, but I'm with you. I get burned out on it.
That's not to say that it's bad. I think some of it's bad.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they're doing their job, right? It's for the casual fan. I just think, me personally, I can't live in that and I can't worry about that because that just burns me out so fast.
So we will jump into sort of the slow rapid fire that is unnamed and jingle pending. Also I think going to have some intro music next week, maybe too. My music guy who is in the band that's going to produce the intro song, or actually I'm going to use theirs. He'll be back in town next week. But anyway, the unnamed slowish rapid fire thing we'll jump through. I do have to say before we start that like there's nothing more on brand for Kevin Leip than bringing up the freaking 27-point comeback. I mean, I'm sitting here. We're talking about is the Eeyore justified? And you go to that game of all things. My gosh.
That's one of those you never forget those, man.
No, I mean, certainly not.
You also never forget, you know, to me, game six of the 2013 Clippers series is the exact opposite of that game, right? It's like, I don't know that I'll ever be at another sporting event like that in my whole life. No. It was like, it was just 3 hours of euphoria.
Yeah, and that's one of the things for them to figure out is how do you, this personality and character that everyone loves so much, not just locally, but gets the publication, or the pub nationally, how do you continue to sort of do that when the team is not as good? But that's a challenge for people smarter than me.
Or even how do you continue to be the underdog for 8 years?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like if it's your first chance to knock them off and to get past them, that's one thing. When you've been in the first round or second round 7 years in a row, it's not that new exciting thing anymore.
True.
It's not people aren't going to spontaneously start chanting "Whoop that trick."
Yeah, and while Twitter is never a great way to gauge reality, you do see a lot of people that are debating keeping season tickets and things like that because maybe it does feel stale. But anyway, we'll start hitting these really quickly.
The lightning round.
The sort of lightning round. Favorite player of all time?
Oh, Rasheed.
All right, Rasheed Wallace. Least favorite player of all time?
Nate Robinson.
I think that'll be a popular one. I think we've had Reggie Evans maybe, and we got two Gilbert Arenases. So two out of the first three.
Yeah, I can't hate Gilbert Arenas. But yeah, Nate Robinson, man, I wish he could retire twice.
I think he tries to. Favorite basketball media person? Can be writer, TV personality, podcaster, anything you want it to be.
Tom Ziller.
All right. And he was referenced earlier. He was the one that was doing, that's Tom Lorenzo.
Yeah.
Tom Ziller is the Kings.
Yeah, Tom Ziller, he writes the hook for SB Nation now. He was a writer at Free Darko way back in the day. He was involved with Sacktown Royalty for a long time. He's always got some kind of good insight into kind of big picture NBA stuff. I just love everything he writes.
Awesome. All right. So Tom Ziller, favorite NBA moment from your team. We'll assign the Grizzlies to you for the purposes of this.
Favorite NBA moment from my team is what we were just talking about. It's game six when Zach Randolph got ejected in Clippers game six, 2013. Tony Allen popped the Memphis on his jersey. Z-Bo slung his headband into the crowd and then skipped off down the tunnel while like Motorhead was playing.
Yeah.
it was the most WWE like WrestleMania basketball game that there's ever been.
Yeah, I think that, and we'll have some guests that are not Grizzly centric, but it kind of speaks to the infancy of this team that I'm gonna get. I think I went, you know, the 2011
sure.
like Z-Bo 3 in game six, but like you're gonna get one of like three or four answers, if not one or two answers, every time that question comes
there's
up.
Only so many, and I will say that during that game, I was seated in the auxiliary media seats next to the guy running Twitter for the LA Clippers.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's happening. It's like deafening. It felt like the building was going to fall in. Zach's ejected. Barnes and Chris Paul had already been ejected, I think, or maybe Chris Paul was still in the game. And everyone is just howling with rage. 19,000 people. And the Clippers guy just turned to me and gave me this look of like, who are you people? Like, what is happening?
Oh, that's awesome.
Should I be afraid for my life? Like, he was completely bewildered and felt a little bit threatened by where he was. And that is the most Memphis thing that's ever happened.
That would be heaven to me. I am the guy you speak of, like talking about things that are still like weirdo fandom about me, which I still have those things. One of mine is, if you have League Pass, about three or four. Now, if you're out of market, you could do this at any point pretty much. But if you're in the Memphis market and you have League Pass, about 3 or 4 days after a game, it becomes available to you on rewatch.
Yeah.
And when we have like a big comeback, I did this with the Warriors comeback, the Rockets comeback, you can go listen to the other announcers feed. And I watch anytime we win a game or that is against an opponent or against a broadcast crew, I know is awful. Not to say that those two count, and the Rockets do.
Definitely. Clippers do too.
I go back and watch that with their broadcasters because it's you get all of that angst and the refs are screwing us and every bit of it. Oh, I love it.
Never forget that Ralph Lawler made fun of Hamed Haddadi for being Iranian.
Never forget. What is the non-sports thing you consider yourself the biggest fan of? It can be broad or specific.
The non-sports thing I consider myself the biggest fan of. Walt Whitman.
Walt Whitman. All right. Why?
Why? You know, I just like I like gay dudes from the 1800s. So my background. I'm an English major. My degree is in creative writing. I've just always loved poetry. And that's, Whitman is just a poet that I've always gone back to. If I was going to be stranded on an island with one book, it would probably be Leaves of Grass. I try to write in a voice to kind of fit the emotional moment. And so I feel like when the Grizzlies have these kind of big things, there are some things I've done that have tried to ape that register, right? Like that very high emotional oneness and Americanness. And that's just something that I come back to. I feel like he kind of, if you're going to have a positive view about America in general and what it means to be an American, I feel like Walt Whitman has already put that in words for you.
Awesome. All right. We've probably got time for one more of these. And since it is the grump cast, as we are told, we normally, two of the questions are, what is one thing about NBA or Grizzlies Twitter that you love? And then what is one that you hate? But we'll just go with hate. Least favorite part of sort of that way of interacting.
My least favorite part of it, honestly, with the Grizzlies, like, guys, Zach Randolph is not going to start. Like, he doesn't need to start. At some point, you have to realize that. Things can't stay the way they are forever. We saw this last night. Sure, the four guys are good together against certain teams, and they can play well together. At some point. Just the resistance of change and kind of the way of thinking that, well, they made the conference finals with these four guys and Lionel Hollins, so obviously any step away from that is a step back, is a regression. I think there's a real, and it's kind of a subculture now, it's kind of a subset of the replies I get, but like, this is not the same league as it was in 2011, 2012. Like, if you're going to play that slowly and you're going to have bad pick and roll defense, like, you're going to give up threes and you're going to score twos on the other end. And that's how you lose by 20. So, I think there's just kind of an inflexibility and this is a Memphis thing, right? Of just kind of dwelling in when it was good instead of how do we be better? That's one of them. I got a list.
All right. And like I said, you can do a very quick response to this, but, if you've made it all the way, maybe you don't mind a little more basketball analysis-y, time-sensitive talk. Bones where the Parsons thing, he obviously got shut down yesterday, or meniscus injury, however you want to phrase it, but how much did that change? Because obviously you're known, like we've talked all about the grumpy stuff and all of that, but how much did him, whatever news came out yesterday, did that change your view of the future, or are you kind of the same place you were in terms of optimism heading into next year? Because that's really what matters more than, I mean, this team has a very defined ceiling, and who I don't want to say who cares, people care, but it's not the most interesting part of the Grizzlies as we stand here today.
Yeah, you asked the right question, because this season it makes them better. It just does.
Undeniably.
But next season and the seasons after that, you know, if you're looking at a Parsons who is only capable of operating at 75-80% of what maybe he was before all this cavalcade of knee injuries, you're giving $25 million to a guy and the cap projections are coming down from 110 to 100, and then maybe they're going to go down farther. Like, that's a huge percentage of your salary to a guy who's just above average.
Right.
And Yeah, Jeff Green was not above average. Tayshaun Prince was not above average. But you've been trying to fill that small forward spot with a really good guy for a long time. And so now you're just getting more years of above average, and it's filling up your payroll.
Mm-hmm.
I am pretty strongly pessimistic about Parsons' future as a Grizzly. You know,
More so than you would have been 4 days ago, 7 days ago? Like, did the injury change that much, or...
Yeah, I mean, it did. It
solidified.
Yeah, it solidified it because, you know, it could go either way, right? Yeah. If he had continued to play 20 minutes for the rest of the year and looked okay for 15 of them instead of 5 of them by the end of the year, that's progress. And obviously, Vince Carter shows that the first year of that post-injury contract is kind of hit or miss when it's a guy who came from Dallas, who you've now seen three in a row of who are hurt for their first season. Chris Wallace, would you get at me there?
Look forward to giving up something huge for Wesley Matthews at some point.
Yeah, oh God. It's going to be, I mean, yeah, that's, I understand why they signed him. I understand the gamble that they were taking. I think they understood the gamble they were taking. I think that we are headed towards them losing that gamble. And, you know, Chris Wallace is a gambler. He takes chances on guys that nobody
lightning
else
in
take.
A bottle.
Yeah.
It's the favorite phrase.
Of course it is. Yeah, absolutely. Josh Selby was really lightning in a bottle. And, you know,
just couldn't get out of the
he
bottle.
Went to Kansas, though, so we had to draft him. couldn't get out of the bottle. I think they're gonna lose this bet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you have to say if someone puts the question, and this is sort of how I think about basketball, is I hate when people, and you certainly do not do this, we talked about the way you write, I can't stand when people make it an objective thing, because not only is so much unknowable, it's also uninteresting to think of it that way.
Yeah.
But if the question gets posed, is it more likely that the bet pays off or more likely that it does not? I mean, I don't know how you could fall to the does not side.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's kind of how I think about it. And like I said, it's just that turns me off sometimes is people get so digging their heels into a certain point that they come to think they have to talk about it or write about it as if it is completely pure fact. And you can use facts to support your point, obviously.
Yeah.
But like, who knows on some of this ends up being the answer to most basketball questions in terms of the future.
Yeah. I mean, Joe, if you're listening to this, Jeff Green's not good.
Joe, I mean, we almost made it a whole episode, but that'll about wrap us up. Thanks so much for doing it.
Yeah, it was fun.
And we will talk to you guys next week.